When your faith falters. I had another message that I was going to be doing today. This is what I ended with instead, and I saw how it all fit together because of this. It's going to have to go together with next week's. This is the introduction. And I've talked on this subject probably 5 years ago, and I'm going to talk on this subject again a little differently this way, but when I saw why I think God put this in front of me, when you see what next week's sermon is going to end up being, you're going to see how these two just had to be. And, oh gosh, I know this is for me, and I know what everybody's going through, a lot of people are going through in this congregation, and I really wish we had a full house today because we need this so bad. But we're going to get it out there on the net, and hopefully everybody will get to hear it before they come back next week. And it's a topic, when your faith falters, it's a topic that everybody in this room has probably faced in their life, okay? If you haven't, you will. And there's a good chance that even in the number of people that are here right now, there's probably somebody facing it right this minute where you're struggling in your faith for some reason. And not a lot of people, you know, it's not the vogue thing as a Christian to admit that you're struggling with your faith, right? You usually come in with a great plastic smile and it's all good. So out of embarrassment or depression, there's been a lot of people that have had trying times in their life and they're going through them right now. And sometimes it's finances. Sometimes it's relationships. Sometimes it's sickness. Sometimes it's death. Sometimes it's a loss of a job. Sometimes it's self-identity. In this world today, how many people do you think suffer with gender or sexual identity, and how many people as Christians are going to ever talk to somebody about that? They're going to suffer quietly, and they're going to question everything about themselves and their faith. How many people have been victims of abuse or crime, and they don't want to talk about it, and it just eats them up inside? And so many things happen. And a time like that can become so difficult to you. And have you ever had something like that that happens, you don't understand it, and it just doesn't make sense to you, and it goes on and on and on, and you can't let it go, and it gnaws away at you, and it's all you begin to think about, and you just get lost in it, and it really starts to bother you. And then it gets to a point that you begin to question your faith. And I don't know if you've ever been there. I, as a pastor, can tell you that. I've been a Christian for many, many, many years. I have had a moment or two in my life where something has gotten so bad to me, and I didn't want to talk about it to other people, and my faith began to falter quietly. No one ever knew. And I know other people have been there. And you begin to question everything you built your life on. You built your entire life on this faith, and suddenly you're questioning it because of something terrible that's happened or something that continues to happen, and you don't understand it. It won't quit, and you can't make any sense of it. And inside, you begin to question. And then here's where the vicious circle comes in, okay? You start to question your faith, and that hurts you and gets you depressed and anxious inside because you feel so guilty for questioning your faith. Have you ever been there? And then it starts to circle, and it leaves you, it just uproots your life. And what it happens is it puts you in a private hell that as a Christian you don't want to talk about. You just can't talk about it to anybody. And sometimes it leaves you on the threshold of walking away. And then here's the killer. Here's how it really goes. And I don't know if some of you can relate to this or not, but I've talked with and I've counseled with a lot of people that have done this. You start to feel angry. You start to feel guilty. You start to question God. And then you begin to think, well, if God is real, if he is real, what must he think of me now? The way I have questioned him, the way I have just almost dropped my faith, the way I have just almost turned my back on everything I've said I believed, I'm not even worthy of him now. He probably wants nothing to do with me, right? And then you get to this point, well, Lord, you say you're not going to test anybody beyond what they're able to handle. And obviously, I feel like I couldn't handle this because I'm about to lose my faith. So, Lord, if you are real, why did you let me get to this point? And you can just really get yourself in a frenzy. And you can just live in this torment and you don't know what to do about it. And as Christians, here's the thing, and this church is very different, and I'll throw this out to you right off the bat before we go into this. You should never get to that point and suffer alone. And I'm going to show you why God understands doubts, okay? It doesn't mean they're good, but God understands doubts. And everybody in here, if you ever get to that point, you should come to someone and you should not suffer alone, okay? You should open up to somebody. But if this hits home with you, if you've ever been there, and I'm going to tell you this with the utmost confidence. One, some of you have been there. Two, some of you are probably there right now. Three, 100% guaranteed, if you haven't, you will. And that's scriptural. I don't have to back off on that claim. You will. Okay? And it's, in the Christian world, it's just such a terrible thing to talk about it. That so many people literally fall away and they're a hollow shell on the inside and they may or may not sit in church for weeks, months, or years and be dead and no one knows. And then they eventually just drift off one day because they've been dead on the inside, questioning their faith and everything they thought they believed for a long time. And they might be the pillars of the church. It's even more reason why they can't talk about it. And I know this affects a lot of people and it just needs to be brought out face to face. So we're going to talk about doubts this week. And it's going to lead into next week, God and evil. Because a lot of our doubts come from evil that we don't appreciate and we don't understand if there's a God. Right? They fit together like hand and glove. But this we have to cover first. So this is what the first thing I want you to understand. We've got a small crowd, so you've got to be loud. If you listen, say amen. Amen. All right, thank you. If you have been there, if you are there, I want you to take heart. Because, one, you're not alone. And listen to me here. Two, God is not surprised when you gave your heart to Him long ago. In His foreknowledge, do you not think He saw this day? When you would be worried and you would be questioned and you would be doubting. And He's not offended. And He doesn't ever lose His love for you. And what we've understood through Wednesday night study of Abraham, when you have got your doubts, when you have just dropped everything, and on inside you become hollow, even if nobody knows, and you have become unfaithful to Him in your doubts, He promises He still loves you, He's still there, and He's still going to be faithful until He gets you through. So when you have those moments of doubt, He doesn't give you the stiff arm or the throat punch and say, how dare you, and then go over in the corner and sulk like a child. He is a holy God. He is so far from us, you can't understand it. He's a big boy, and He loves you dearly. And when you have your moments of infidelity where you're doubting and it's tearing you up inside and you don't even know what you believe about Him anymore, He's still as crazy about you as He's ever been. And He already sees where and when He's going to get you back on track, and He's going to stay with you. And you don't have to suffer thinking God has thrown you in the corner and done away with you. He's still with you, even when you're suffering. And you can glory in the fact that you can say, God, even though I don't even know where I'm coming or going anymore, I know You love me. And it's awesome. That's why God is worthy to be praised. So I want to put you at ease if you're there right off the bat, okay? And let you know God understands and that He's okay with you. And you're not thrown away because you've doubted. And besides not being offended, believe it or not, He gives us a scriptural answer on how to handle it. And we're going to talk about it tonight, okay? How many of you have ever heard of this guy called John the Baptist? Kind of hope so, if you've ever cracked open the scriptures at all, okay? He's one of the most popular guys in the Bible. And we're going to talk about him for a minute. He's going to be our springboard, okay? So this is what I want us to look at real quick. I want us to think about John and all he had going for his faith. Think about if you were John the Baptist. This is what he's got going for him. One, there are prophecies about him and his mission from God in scriptures hundreds of years before he was even born. Wouldn't it be rocking if you could read about yourself in scriptures and what your mission was going to be before you were even born? Pretty rocking. His birth itself was a miracle. because he was born to a woman way past the age of childbearing, and he was born for a special mission to Elizabeth and Zacharias. He was raised as the cousin of Jesus himself, with the knowledge that he was the one that was going to prepare the way for the Messiah. He was filled with the Spirit before he was born. He became a Nazarite from birth, one who is set aside with a special mission from God on his life. Becoming a Nazarite can be a short-term or a lifetime thing, and he was a lifetime Nazarite. He had a special mission with a special promise in his life for God. He spent his entire life alone in a desert instead of in a community because he had to prepare for God's mission. And I'm telling you all this for a big reason. He wore crazy rough clothes. He ate a crazy strict diet. And he did all these things to prove that he had not been trained or educated or influenced by anything in the world. He was about as separate as you could be. Okay? Now, see if you had this one in your credentials. He was the single human being who baptized God in the flesh. He literally was the one to baptize Jesus Christ. You take that for granted, that's pretty rocking. Okay? He worked to humbly decrease, even though he had this awesome ministry, he worked to totally decrease his ministry to make room for Jesus Christ, because he wanted Jesus to be everything. And for over 2 years, he personally saw the miracles of Jesus. And the ones he didn't get to see were reported to him firsthand by all of his buddies. Of all people, this is what I'm trying to say. Of all people in history, I'm asking you, did anybody have any more reason to know and believe in Jesus Christ than John the Baptist? Born with a special mission, spoken about in history, saw the miracles, was his own cousin to Jesus Christ, baptized Jesus, watched his miracles, was personally involved in proclaiming his name to the entire world. Who on earth had more reason to know firsthand the character and the miracles and the beauty of Jesus Christ than John the Baptist? Would you not agree? He was one of the first-hand, most knowledgeable people in the whole history of mankind. Now, with that said, I want to take you to another scene in John's life. And I want to let you hear a question that he asked that you would just think is unbelievable. And I want you to really think about this. And most people overlook the importance of this in Scripture. Okay? The John the Baptist that I just told you about, he gets to a place in his life, and this is what he does. Matthew 11:2. Now when John, he was in prison, heard in prison about the deeds of Christ, he sent word by his disciples and said to him, this is what he sent word to Jesus and asked, are you the one who is to come, or shall we look for another? I just told you everything, that John is the one that baptized him and saw the Holy Spirit come down while he was holding Jesus in his hands and light on him. John is the one that was born for no other reason than to proclaim his name. John saw all of his miracles. What in the world happened? How could John, with this history and this experience, get to a point in his life where he sends word to Jesus, are you even the Messiah? Are you who I thought you were? Or do I need to be looking for somebody else? John, of all people. Now you know you got some pretty good company if you have a moment of doubt. John the Baptist. Now, this is so cool. You got to understand where John is and all he's been through. And we're going to talk more about it in a minute, okay? Because we're all human. And John had reached the end of himself. And we'll talk about why in a minute. But listen to this. He might have had more solid evidence, more experiences. But mentally and physically and emotionally, he was shot. And no matter how strong you are, you're going to get worn down sometimes. And this is the deal. It starts with this. This is John's mindset, if we could go back and visit him. And I'm reading this in from Scriptures, not just coming up with it. Number one, John probably had the mindset of everybody in his time, and that was this, that Jesus had not come to die at that point. Nobody really understood that. Everybody thought, what? Jesus has come because he is the Messiah who is to deliver. He is going to kick some Roman hiney. He's going to take some names. He's going to destroy everybody and everything, and he's going to bring back the kingdom that he promised us. So they saw Jesus as the great. They saw him riding in with a leather jacket on a Harley, right? He was going to take names, and he was going to bring back the kingdom, all right? Now, listen. They thought he was there. John thought he was there. He made the way for Jesus Christ so he could come in and forcibly remove all their oppression. 2 years later, after all his squawking about Jesus, Jesus is still walking around as this humble, weak nobody. He's not done anything of importance. He doesn't even have his own home. He's eating grain out of the fields. Now imagine this. John is like, he's talking about his leader. He's proclaiming Jesus Christ with all his glory and valor. So he gets arrested and put in prison, right? And then he's like, that's okay, dude, because the man's coming, and when he takes over all of Rome and he comes and busts me out, you're going to be sorry. Then a couple years later, guess where John still is? He's still in prison, right? He's still waiting for God to come. He's still waiting for Jesus to do his thing. Now imagine you've talked junk about this and you're waiting on your leader and you're sitting in prison. 2 years later, you're still rotting away, and suddenly your leader is losing popularity, and everybody's turning on your leader, and your leader doesn't look like he's going to rise up politically, militarily, or anything. And then suddenly you start hearing word about everybody wants to kill Jesus, and nobody wants to follow Jesus anymore. And you're still sitting in prison because of him, because you gave your whole life for this guy that's supposed to lead the great rebellion. And Jesus didn't do one thing that John, in his own mind, had assumed that Jesus was supposed to do. Can you relate to this? You had it all worked out of what Jesus was supposed to do, what made sense. And now it hasn't happened, and years have gone by, and you're suffering every day because of your faithfulness to someone who didn't do anything he said he was going to do in your eyes. And so John is beside himself. And this is where I know that I've gone, and some of us in this room have gone. We look for what, and we're human. I'm not beating you up over it, but this is just how it happens. Bless you. We look at what we want, what we need, what we expect from God, rather than what he actually has plainly promised us. And so often, we fail to see that God has an agenda that we are supposed to be a part of, instead of the fact we think we have an agenda that God is supposed to be a part of. There's a really big difference in the two things that I just said. You don't get to have the agenda that you make him a part of. He is the agenda, and you're part of his agenda. And too often, we've already come up with everything we think he's supposed to be doing. And the only time you ever get disappointed is if you have your own expectations above God, and then you hold him to your expectations. And I do it quite frequently. So it gets easy to get lost in despair and disappointments while we're waiting on our expectations. And some of us have this exact thought process that John had. We're in our own little prison, and we love God, and we're trying to serve God, and he hasn't done anything for us in our world. And so we start to question who he is. And it's not hard to sometimes ask, are you the one that I thought you were, or do I need to be looking for something else? And this is what I want you to know right off the bat, because we're going to dig into this deep and get some answers, but it is not, listen to me, it is not unreasonable or evil for us to sometimes be upset over things that are totally unexplainable in our understanding, in our knowledge and wisdom. When something comes along that is totally unexplainable and completely in pain and against everything that we think God would want to do in our lives, it is not evil for us to sometimes step back and just be taken back and not and just be hurt and questioning. We're human. God understands that. He's not shaken. He's not angry. Let me tell you something. I want you to think about this. Listen close. If God was not okay with the fact that we have real, unavoidable times that we have weakness and doubt, if he was not okay with that, Why did he fill his entire book with doubters? Do you realize that the Bible is full in stories and in writings of doubters? And we're going to go somewhere with this. Don't think I'm talking blasphemy, okay? We're going to bring this around and we're going to make sense of it. But we've got to grasp this because every one of us has been a part of this doubting world. And you just got to face it. And stop letting it eat you and learn how to handle it so that it can be turned into something powerful instead of living in your doubts and letting them eat you alive. That's what we got to do. You don't beat it till you face it. So let's face it. He allowed writers of his very word to record their doubts and their anger and their feelings of injustice and all the unfairness that they were feeling. And this is what's so amazing. Do you want to tell me that God's word is not really God's word versus all these other books? God not only tells you, it's okay, I understand if you doubt me sometimes, but he fills the word up with all the doubts you could possibly have from his own writers. Well, here, you could doubt me for this and this and this and this. Here, I'll give you some examples. Just read these if you doubt. You don't even have to come up with them. It's full. It's chocked full of people that wrote his own word that had their moments of doubt. He gives you almost every objection a man could come up with long before Richard Dawkins or Stephen Hawking or Christopher Hitchens or anybody else could ever come up with any reason why you shouldn't believe God. He gave you all the reasons you needed in his own pages. And if you've ever read Job or God's prophets or the Psalms, then what I'm going to do now, and I'm going to read you a few of them, not just one or two, and I'm doing it on purpose. And anytime we're reading God's word, it's not being wasted, buddy. I want you to sink in with this, and I want you to hear every word that these people are writing, because my first hope is that we will understand and relate to and be okay with the fact of telling God and ourselves, I have had a problem with this. And I have had my moments of doubt, even if I hide it from myself. Maybe I'm so hollow because I'm doubting you and don't even want to admit it to myself because I'm scared. Because if you won't admit it, how are you going to do something about it? And I've watched people the way they live. I know they're doubting or they wouldn't live the way they are because if God was real to them, they couldn't do the things they're doing. So there's doubt. But the beauty of it is I want you to see how some of the most powerful people in the Bible were where you might be. I want you to listen to the words I'm getting ready to read to you, penned by God's own prophets, and I want you to see if you have ever related to them, okay? Habakkuk 1, verse 2. O Lord, how long shall I cry for help and you will not hear? Or cry to you, violence, and you will not save? So the law is paralyzed and justice never goes forth, for the wicked surround the righteous, so justice goes forth perverted. Psalms 13:1. How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? Has anybody felt like saying that? Anybody but me? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? Let that sentence sink in. How many of you could scream that to God? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemies triumph over me? Look on me and answer, Lord my God. Give light to my eyes or I will sleep in death. Does this sound like a man that's feeling a lot of faith in God right now? Do you know how this is how big my God is? Do you know why God included that in the scriptures? To give you comfort when you feel that way. To let you go somewhere and read something, to let you know, I understand or I wouldn't have it in my book. I know where you're coming from. Read and understand that I see and I love you. Psalm 88:9. My eyes are blinded by my tears. Each day I beg for your help, O Lord. I lift my hands to you for mercy. You've taken away my companions and loved ones. Darkness is my closest friend. Psalm 89:46. O Lord, how long will this go on? Will you hide yourself forever? Verse 49. Lord, where is your unfailing love? Job 6, but I don't have the strength to endure. I have nothing to live for. Do I have the strength of a stone? Is my body made of bronze? No. I am utterly helpless without any chance of success. And this is the last one I'll read to you, and we could go on. Job 7, 11 through 16, 11 through 20 altogether. I cannot keep from speaking. I must express my anguish. My bitter soul must complain. I think my bed will comfort me and sleep will ease my misery. But then you shatter me with dreams and terrify me with visions. I would rather be strangled, rather die than suffer like this. I hate my life and I don't want to go on living. Oh, leave me alone for my few remaining days. What are people that you should make so much of us, that you should think of us so often? For you examine us every morning and test us every moment. Why won't you leave me alone at least long enough for me to swallow? If I have sinned, what have I done to you, O watcher of all humanity? Why make me your target? Am I a burden to you? Believe me, you're not alone. And before we address how God feels about these doubts and what we can do to overcome them, we first need to get a very clear understanding of what doubt is. And I hope when you listen to me for the next 5 minutes, you're going to get this light bulb and you're going to get an epiphany and think, oh my gosh, he's right. Okay? So listen close. Let's start with this question. What do you think is the opposite of faith? Most people would say doubt. Doubt's the opposite of faith. It's not. Unbelief. Unbelief is the opposite of faith. You say they're the same thing. They're not. Listen close. Doubt is a mental question looking for answers. And it's a byproduct of not being able to understand. I doubt something because I don't understand it. And I have mental anguish wanting to understand it. And it's natural for something to happen to make you, because you have limited knowledge, I don't understand. I doubt what's going on, right? Here's the difference. Unbelief is an active choice of will regardless of the evidence. Doubt is not a sin. Listen to me. This is important. Okay? Doubt is not a sin. Doubt becomes a sin when? When you doubt God, it's not a sin. It becomes a sin when, instead of looking for real answers, instead of looking for everything God has ever done and who He is and all the proof that He still loves you, instead of looking for real answers, you water down your doubt with anger and self-pity and unforgiveness and fretfulness and selfishness. And you get so wrapped up in yourself that instead of looking for real answers, instead of remembering who God is and trying to have some understanding and fit into what He's doing, you just meet Him with nothing but me, 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 me. And you just get mad and put Him on trial and throw Him away, and you choose to disbelieve Him. That's different than doubt. Doubt is, I don't understand, help me. Unbelief is, I could care less, you hurt me, go away, I don't want you anymore. Do you understand the difference? If Brenda did something I didn't understand and it made me doubt, why did you do that, Brenda? I'm going to come to you. I want to work this out. I love you. I trust you. You got to help me understand, because I'm hurting and I don't understand, but I trust you. Unbelief is, I don't really care what you say. You hurt me, go away. Do you see the difference? It's a big difference. I can have doubts and go to my wife in love and still love her and still trust her character and openly say, you have to help me understand, because I want you. I want to believe you. I want to see what's going on, but I have doubts. And that's a big difference from just choosing to disbelieve in my wife anymore and throw her away. The disbelief comes when I meet my doubts in nothing but self-pity and anger and unforgiveness. That is when your doubt becomes sin. That is when you wallow in it, and that is when it overtakes you. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's a big deal for you to understand this. How you meet your doubt determines whether you fall into sin or you go into greater faith. Mark 16, 14. Afterwards, he appeared to the 11 themselves as they were reclining at a table, and he rebuked them for their hardness of heart because they had not believed those who saw him after he had risen. He brought proof for their doubts. And in their doubts, they still, because of hardness of heart, refused to believe. And Jesus rebuked them. That's when it had become sin. So, with that understanding, this is three questions we're going to try to answer very quickly, okay? One, listen close. How does God feel about us when we reach a point in our lives that we doubt him and we doubt his ways? Two, why does he have to test us to a point that we do begin to doubt? When he said, I will not test you beyond your ability to resist. So why does he push us to that point? Why do I get to this point, Lord, that I am doubting you when you said you won't push me beyond what I can handle? It's a good question to ask him, is it not? And three, how can we get through times of doubt and how can we get back on solid ground? Because some of us lose that footing and we spend the rest of our lives on the threshold of depression because we've lost our footing. So that's what we're going to talk about for the next few minutes. So first, how does God feel about our doubts? I want you to listen to this, and I love it. I love it. Let's return to our story of John the Baptist and find out literally how Jesus feels when we doubt him, okay? Now, here's the deal. Jesus was out talking to a bunch of people, and the disciples came up, and in front of the whole crowd, this is what was so bad. In front of the whole crowd, they say, your cousin John the Baptist who proclaimed you in front of the whole world and said the Messiah is coming? Yeah, that guy, he told me to come ask you, are you really him or do we need to look for somebody else? And he asked that in front of everybody. Now, if you're the modern day pastor who runs the mega church of 5,000, how do you think you're going to feel when somebody just questioned you in front of your flock? Would you talk some smack? Jesus should have been offended. But now listen, because remember what he said, are you the one who is to come or do I need to look for somebody else? This is how Jesus responds. First, he sends consoling and reassuring words to John. He doesn't say, go tell John, how dare you when you've seen more and you know more and I wrote prophecies about you and you're supposed to be the man, how dare you? You will die in prison. That's what he should have said. But John questions him in front of the world. Matthew 11, 4. And Jesus answered them. And I'm telling you, I am sure, and I'm going to show you why in a minute, but listen to me. I am sure, and I'm going to read these words the way I think he said them. I'm sure Jesus said these words with the sweetest, most brokenhearted tenderness he could have said them. And you'll see why in a minute, okay? Jesus answered them, go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, and the lame walk, and lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear, and the dead are raised up, and the poor have good news preached to them, and blessed is the one who is not offended by me. And what he's doing is comparing everything he's doing to all the miracles that Isaiah said that the Messiah was going to perform. He's saying, go and tell my brother John that you've seen this, and you've seen this, and you've seen this, and that I have done everything that Isaiah himself said the Messiah was supposed to do, so that he will know that I am the one. Okay? And this is why I know he said it in a sweet way. Because as soon as he tells him, he's like, okay, guys, go tell John this. Because I know John has got to be in the deepest throes of sorrow for him to question me after all we've been through. He's in jail. He's questioning everything. Go tell him this, boys. And then he turns around to the crowd that just heard everything that happened, right? And he addresses the crowd. And he doesn't say, if you have a lack of faith like John did, you're going to hell. That's not what he said, okay? Listen to what he says. Matthew 11, verse 7. As they went away, Jesus began to speak to the crowds concerning John. What did you go out into the wilderness to see? A reed shaken by the wind? What then did you go out to see? A man dressed in soft clothing? Behold, those who wear soft clothing are in king's houses. What then did you go out to see? A prophet? Yes. I tell you, and more than a prophet, this is he of whom it is written, behold, I send my messenger before your face, who will prepare your way before you. Truly, I say to you, among those born of women, there has arisen no one greater than John the Baptist. Yet the one who is least in the kingdom of heaven is greater than he. So it's so obvious that Jesus is adamantly and lovingly in front of the crowd where he just got dissed, defending John. He's like, you went out to see this man before he got arrested. Who did you think you were going to see? Let me tell you something about the man that they just questioned. That man is the greatest man this side of heaven. And that man just questioned everything Jesus was about. Did it look like Jesus was taken back, offended, discouraged, brokenhearted that John was having a moment of weakness? No. He said, hey, this guy that just questioned my existence, this is the greatest guy this side of heaven. He adored him. He knew where he was coming from. He knew his human frailties, just like he knows yours. So while John was questioning him, Jesus stood in front of the crowd, and Jesus was his intercessor to pump him up in front of that crowd and say, don't you disrespect what you just heard. He's the man. And now, that was great, but let me tell you something. Please listen. When you have your moments of doubt, Jesus is still up to his old business. Okay? Listen to this. Hebrews 7:25. Therefore, he is able, once and forever, to save those who come to God through him. He lives forever to intercede with God on their behalf. Listen to this one. Hebrews 2:17. Therefore, it was necessary for him to be made in every respect like us. I know you've heard this before, but listen to it like it's the first time. Listen. It was necessary. He was to be made in every respect like us, his brothers and sisters, so that he could be our merciful and faithful high priest before God. Why would he have to be merciful and faithful if we didn't fail him? Right? Then he could offer a sacrifice that would take away the sins of the people, since he himself has gone through suffering and testing. He is able to help us when we're being tested. Now, this is what I want you to understand. One, he says, I came down. I became you. I've suffered what you've suffered so that I can be merciful. So that when these moments occur and you doubt everything about me, I'm not angry at you. I understand. I pray for you and I love you and I'll be faithful when you're not. Let me show you how far. Listen, let me show you how far Jesus went to make sure that when we fail him in our lack of faith, in our doubt, that he could understand and envelop us in just as much love as if we were praising his name, because Jesus, in his human frailty, let himself go to that exact spot. And was he sinless? Yes. So if Jesus was sinless, could a moment of doubt in our human frailties be a sin if he suffered them? No. Listen to the words of Jesus Christ. Matthew 27:46. God, my God, why have you forsaken me? Does that sound like for a moment Jesus Christ had doubt? With everything in him, he doubted in that moment. Because in his human frailty, he could take no more. What kind of God would get to the point that he would allow himself to fall in such human frailty that he even doubted his own father so that he could understand how we feel? So when you have those moments of doubt, you can come to him and know he is merciful and faithful and he has not changed anything about how he feels about you. He adores you and he goes to the Father and says, God, do you remember when I was there? Do you remember when I doubted you and I didn't understand and I couldn't take it? He's where I was, God. It's okay. He's where John the Baptist was, God. It's okay. I understand. I'm just going to go give him a hug, okay? You don't have to beat yourself up and feel like God has isolated himself, because he wants to wrap around you more than ever, because he knows. That's why he's the great intercessor. So, the next obvious question if God does understand, if he's gotten there, if he's felt it, and he even more, he understands how we feel, then my next question is, why do you even let me go through struggles and tough times to a point that it causes me so much pain and so much confusion that it makes me doubt in the first place? God, why would you let me have that? If you understand, if you know how bad I hurt, why do you do it? What purpose could you possibly have for allowing me to suffer in doubt? 1 Peter 1:6, listen close. So be truly glad. There's wonderful joy ahead, even though you have to endure. Listen closely to me. I don't care that you've heard this. You've heard it, but you're not hearing, okay? Listen. Even though you have to endure many trials for a little while, listen, these trials will show that your faith is genuine. It is being tested as fire tests and purifies gold. Though your faith is far more precious than mere gold, so when your faith remains strong through many trials, it will bring you much praise and glory and honor on the day when Jesus Christ is revealed to the whole world. Listen close and understand like you've never understood before. Look at me. Real faith is not possible without first having doubt. That is not blasphemy. Did you hear what I said? Based on that verse that I just read to you, real faith is not possible without you having been first pushed to the point of doubt. Why? Because you do not truly show your love and your trust until you're brought to the choice of believing Him beyond what you see and understand in your own wisdom. Like we demonstrated a minute ago, you're going to reach a point that things don't make sense and things don't add up and things don't go the way you wanted. And it's going to naturally cause you to have a moment of doubt. Now listen, when that doubt comes, it's how you handle that doubt that's either going to bring you great faith or great unbelief, and then sin. Listen, if you let moments of doubt bring nothing but emotional responses of self-pity and pride like we talked about, and you're lost in the sea of me, 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 and you make an emotional, purposeful choice not to trust God, then your doubt has become unbelief. And at that point, I'm telling you that trial that you went through has served you so well, because the truth is you never were belonging to God. And it took that trial to make you have your moment of doubt, because in your moment of doubt, you were either going to respond in love for God or you were either going to respond in total love for self. And that trial made you see that you totally love yourself. And even if you turned on God, that trial was there for a wonderful purpose, to show you you were never His in the first place. Do you understand that? Something happened with me and Brenda, and it made me doubt that, oh my gosh, did she go out on me? If I really love her and I want it to work, I'm going to go and I'm going to find out and I'm going to be willing to do whatever it takes and find out what's going on. If I'm just all about me, 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 the first sign that I think she did something wrong, I'm like, forget you, woman. If you're going to do that to me, you go have the man. And I'm going to run off. Well, if that's the case, I wasn't really in the game anyway. I didn't really want to be with her. And that's what God is saying. If I put you to the test, if I take you to that point that you have to go back and look at everything that you say you think I am, and instead of going back and looking at me with those eyes and trusting my character, you decide to wallow in self-pity and give me the stiff arm, then you never belonged to me in the first place. No relationship knows that it's a true love relationship until it's been tested. Every beautiful love story you ever see or read is a beautiful love story because they went through hell and they were tested and their love was shown to be pure, right or wrong. God has to create a beautiful love story. Therefore, times have to come to make you question. And your real love is not shown for Him until you get to a point that you're going to question Him. Now you have room for real love. And it takes these moments, as it did Jesus with John. Listen, Jesus reminded John of all these things that I'm telling you. When you get to these moments, this is what I want you to do, okay? When you get to those moments that, you know, God, it's been 6 months, and I'm so tired of fighting this, and I'm so tired of being depressed, and where are you? Why haven't you done anything? How could you let this happen? Think about this. First of all, acknowledge all of God's prophecies and words and how incredible the scriptures are and how incredibly they're written. Acknowledge history and archaeology and science and all the things we've talked about the last 5 years that show, oh my gosh, God has to be real. Just like Jesus said to John, hey, what about this and this and this and this and this? Just like it was all written, I'm doing it, John, don't you see? I want to intellectually hit you and make you realize, number one, you have intellectual reason to know that I am God. We have every reason in the world to know that he doesn't hide himself. So first, think on that. Secondly, remember all that God has already done in your life. I know that God has kept my family alive in areas that he shouldn't have. I know he's brought my family together in salvation in ways that wouldn't have happened without him. I know without him living in my heart and showing me his laws and his precepts, I, in my stupidity, would have left my wife a long time ago out of my selfishness. I know I would not be the man that I even try to struggle to be when I do sometimes get it right for my family or for anybody else. Anything good in me would not be there if it wasn't for God. I know it. I know what a wreck my life would be if he was not in it. I know, and I shared this morning, some of the incredible miracles that he's already done. Places where I have said, God, why? How long? What are you doing? This will never work. Only to pull things out of my memory box now in remembrance that he pulled it off in a miracle in ways that I would never have understood. I've already seen him do it. How can I see him do it once and not trust him now? I know that he has suffered far beyond anything I'll ever suffer just so he could be there for me. And I know his character. And I know his mercy. And when I don't understand, but I have all the evidence that he is, I have all the evidence that he has done in the past, I have all the evidence of how wonderful and beautiful his character is, how, just because I don't understand now, can I throw all that away and grab hold of my own self-pity and say, forget you, God, I'm tired of it. I just don't even know if I believe you anymore. Faith in God does not come until you have to believe in him beyond what you see and understand. If you think I made it up, listen to these verses and understand what sense they make now. Hebrews 11:1. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of what, class? Things not seen. I don't have faith in him unless it's in something I've not seen, but I just trust who he is. I trust his character. Listen to this one. Romans 8:18. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed in us. Verse 24. For in this hope we were saved. Now, hope that is seen is not hope. For who hopes for what is seen? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience. Likewise, the Spirit helps us in our weaknesses, for we do not know what to pray for as we ought. But the Spirit himself intercedes for us with groanings too deep for words. He says, when you're so deep in pain that you don't even know how to pray because you don't have any way of seeing through it, he says, that's when the real faith occurs. When you still trust me in what you can't see. When you still trust me in what you can't see that hurts you so bad the Spirit has to pray for you, that's when it's faith. How much clearer can scriptures be that you're going to reach points that you don't understand and you've got doubt? And that's your moment to prove your faith. In our darkest moments, and some of you are there, when things haven't gone the way you planned and they haven't gone the way you've prayed, when you've prayed about something so long you've lost clear judgment on it anymore, You're just kind of existing. Just remember, God doesn't mind your doubts. He understands. But I want you to remember, even though He understands and He wants you to bring it to Him and He wants you to be honest, just like everybody we read about in Scriptures, He also is waiting to see what you're going to do with your doubts. Are you going to use them as an excuse to build your emotional case for how pitiful you are and wallow in it? Or are you going to reflect back on everything you know about Him and everything He's done for you and everything He suffered and the fact that He promised you that these trials would come because He wants you in this moment of doubt to show Him you're going to choose Him because you trust His character? If you're in doubt, this is what you're facing. Are you going to continue to think about self and put Him on trial? Or are you going to turn back around and say, You've never let me down. I know You love me. I know You have a purpose. I know You felt all the pain I'm feeling. I know You've never left me. I know You're praying for me. And I know that You will get me through. And I will trust You even if You slay me. That's what He's waiting for. And if you're in a trial and you're doubting and you can't work your way through and say that, chances are He's never had your heart in the first place because you're going to doubt. But you're not going to choose disbelief unless you just don't want Him. Do you understand that? So next week we're going to go into a lot of study on all the bad things that happen in the world. And if God's a good God and God's omnipotent and God can control everything, how does evil fit in? We're going to study that in great detail. But you can't get to that. You don't even need to worry about studying evil and how God could even be involved in a world that has so much evil and still be God. You don't even need to get to that until you get to this point that we're at right now when you have your moments of doubt. What are you going to do with them? So I'm asking you, stop judging yourself. God's with you. I'm asking you, once you understand God's with you, go to Him and say, this is everything laid out. I don't understand how long. I get mad at You at times. I am dying inside. It's okay. And then I'm asking you to end it with, but I know You're real. I know You love me. I'm not always meant to understand. I choose to believe in Your love and Your character no matter what happens. And wait and see what He'll do. It's the greatest time in your life that you can honor Him. It's probably one of the only times you can truly honor Him, when the doubt comes in and you choose Him based on His character and what He's done. So I don't know what's going on in your life, but I do know that some of us are living in doubt. I'm asking you, be dead level, gut honest with Him, and ask Him to help you deal with it. And begin to trust Him again. You don't have to understand, and the pain doesn't have to go away, to know that He's working and know that He's got it and know that He's been where you are and know He's going to get you through. Stand with me if you would.